The Fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Have you got game? Got game on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Coming up this week, a major leak when it comes to the next Call of Duty game. E.T. is going home. It turns out he was living in the desert in New Mexico. Plus, Brett Laurie of the Blue Jays joins us to talk about being on the cover of MLB The Show, and we have reviews of The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Child of Light.
Have you got game?
You're back listening to another week of Got Game here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And we apologize for that fact.
Thank you. Thank you so much. To steal a word from Tim and Sid, Plazo. I think that's copyright in Tim and Sid, so we have to pay some money. But it's okay. I like those guys, so hopefully they'll be nice to us. I am Omen Qureshi, Christine Chubb, and Brian Calhoun around the table. You can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. Check the blog sportsnet590.ca. There you'll also find a podcast. If you miss it there, you can find it on iTunes and the TuneIn app. You can email us, gotgame@sportsnet590.ca. If you missed all that, look it up on the podcast. You can find it all again.
And welcome to the only show this week which will not be talking about Rob Ford.
Or, what's his name? Ronald Sterling? Whatever Sterling's name
is. No, we'll talk about Donald Sterling. We'll fit in someplace. So right. I'll make it happen.
Oh, I really would not like to. But sure, why not? We'll find a way to work racism and video games in together and talk about it. Lots to talk about this week. We will have a feature interview with Brett Laurie of the Toronto Blue Jays coming up in the second segment. He is on the cover of MLB The Show. The PlayStation 4 version comes out on Tuesday. So Mr. Laurie was good enough to meet up with us and talk, and we will talk about what it's like to be the first Canadian on the cover of the Canadian edition of the game.
I can work in right now. Do you think Donald Sterling's favorite video game is BioShock Infinite?
I was just thinking that,
God,
too.
That was a pretty racist video game. An awesome game, but there was a lot of racism in that game.
Okay, so it's done.
There you go. Done. Well done, Calhoun. Kudos to you for working that in. Also this week, the newest issue of Call of Duty, there was a bit of a leak about who's going to be in it and who's going to do the voice of it. You may know him as Frank Underwood on House of Cards. You may know him as Kaiser Soze from
The
Usual Suspects.
He's not Kaiser Soze.
Well, you may know him for that movie when he was on the moon.
And he did that movie with the Red Door.
Right.
What was that Red Door movie called?
I don't know.
American Beauty?
Yeah. K-Pax?
K-Pax?
Seven. What's in the box? We are talking about Kevin Spacey.
For a second, you didn't know what his name was.
I was going to say, we're talking about Cameron Diaz. Yeah. No, we're talking about Kevin Spacey, and he's going to be a voice in the next Call of Duty. And this news wasn't supposed to come out this quickly. Apparently, it was leaked.
I literally, last night, wrote a story about how all this Call of Duty stuff was supposed to come out this Sunday, and I put it up on the Sportsnet website, and I don't know, about 2 minutes after it was set to go up, Activision sending me emails. Apparently, they're trying to get ahead of some leaked photos of Call of Duty, what's it called? Call of Duty Advanced Warfare.
Yeah.
And trying to get ahead of that sort of leak that came out and get their own stuff out on their own timetable, I guess. Because, days ahead of time, they're putting out trailers on their own stuff. Not just like people leaking trailers. Activision's putting out trailers on their own sort of social media channels.
It's always pretty crappy when stuff like this happens. I feel bad for the publishers and the developers who are out there and they put all their time and hard work into it. And
they get a hard rap, but they're nice people.
They do, yeah. I mean, we know a lot of them. They work hard and it sucks for them. I mean, I know on our end, we want to see things as quickly as possible, as soon as possible, and we want to talk about it. But they damage controlled well, and the fact of the matter is that Kevin Spacey is going to be in the new Call of Duty game. And
not Emo Phillips.
Not much to Brian Calhoun's dismay. It will not be Emo Phillips.
Well, we're getting closer than we were at this point. We just need like three more games to come out, and then you have your virtual Emo Phillips at this point. I'm actually surprised about how much this looks like Titanfall. For as crazy as that story is about the people who made Call of Duty a household name, going to EA, starting a new studio, and finally releasing their first-person shooter, Titanfall, which is a futuristic shooter with robots and big walking tanks and all sorts of like futuristic stuff. Now, Activision kind of gives their own, I'm going to get in your face sort of action with their own game, set in the future, about robots and first-person shooting and giant walking tanks and all sorts of stuff. It is actually probably, at least in my mind, I think this is probably the best way Activision could have gotten back at Vincent Zampella, or sorry, West and Zampella, the guys who actually were the creative directors of that franchise when all this Infinity Ward Activision stuff went down a couple of years ago. I don't think they could have gotten like a better result in court or anything than like making a game that's pretty much that game again and saying, here we go, here's your game, we made it too, let's see who sells better. I have
branded
a feeling,
Call of Duty, ha ha ha.
And I have a feeling this Call of Duty futuristic shooter will do better than Titanfall, which has sold okay, but I don't think as well,
well
as people thought.
The Call of Duty moniker, you know, is already going to get sales. As to whether it holds up to be a good game is different, but it definitely, I mean, it's the biggest selling franchise of all time, so there's no question that it'll move along quite nicely. I wonder if Kevin Spacey will do any Frank Underwood asides in this game. I know you guys don't watch the show, but in House of Cards, they break the fourth wall often. Frank Underwood does, and he'll just look at the camera and start talking to the audience. So I hope he does some of that in this game. That'd be great.
You haven't seen the trailer yet, but you know, video game footage is obviously a little different than television footage, and there were just a lot of times of here is his face talking at what would be the camera.
Right.
So I do not know if he's doing it, but from what I understand of like seeing commercials for that show, I forget what it's called again. House of Cards. You just said it. From what I know of that show, if you were to tell me that this character that he's playing in this Call of Duty trailer is that same character from House of Cards, I would believe you.
And it's very believable that Frank Underwood, who is part of the government in the U.S. and Washington, could be in some way involved in some Call of Duty stuff. I mean, it's not unforeseen. I mean, he could be part of like a defense council or something like that and get involved in stuff like that.
I think when you pick Kevin Spacey, especially in a role that's getting him so much publicity like this, or when you pick somebody like Kiefer Sutherland after 24, that's what you're going with anyway.
Right.
That's the look that you're going for. That's the feel that you're going for. You want that connection to be made. And I think that it's kind of a natural progression. I like Kevin Spacey. I think it's exciting that he's a part of Call of Duty.
And he wants to be part of it because he wants to be not famous, he's obviously that, but he's trying to reach out to a new demographic.
Yeah.
Get more people. I like Kevin Spacey.
Get more people watching House of Cards.
Call of Duty Advanced Warfare slated to come out November 11th of this year. We will keep you updated.
What happened to that third-person shooter Sledgehammer supposed to be working on? The reports going into, I think, 2012 was that Sledgehammer was working on a Call of Duty game that was supposed to be a third-person shooter.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they dropped that. It's now defunct or something. I guess it's not happening. It's weird. That's what everyone said Sledgehammer was working on, and now they're doing this thing that kind of looks a lot like Titanfall. I'm just wondering what happened to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll keep an eye on it and see what happens as time goes on. You are listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Moment, Brian, Christine, around the table with you for this week's edition. Probably the biggest story to come out not only this week, but in a long time in video games.
I don't know. You really are pushing this next story as the biggest story of this week, but I think Mr. Call of Duty has to say
Christine,
no.
Christine, you're the tiebreaker. What do you think?
We haven't
even teased the story yet, but what do you think?
I'm going to say I was definitely more excited but for the next story than I was for the Call of Duty announcement, but that doesn't mean the Call of Duty announcement isn't special, too.
Well, that was such a mom answer. You guys are both great.
I love you
equally.
Both equally.
Both pictures that you painted are lovely.
I would say the game in my story sold more than the game in your story.
There's no question about that. That is undoubtable. We've talked about it for a while on this show. The biggest urban legend in video games was about the quote-unquote worst video game ever made, the E.T. game for the Atari. It was made. It was a movie tie-in. It was supposedly so bad that the company that made it wanted nothing to do with it, and they allegedly went and dumped it in some landfill in New Mexico and covered it up with concrete. And it's always been denied, admired, and sort of legend and rumor as to whether it was actually real or not. And so this company decided they were going to go out and they were going to figure it out once and for all. They're going to make a documentary about it. They went down to New Mexico. They got the necessary permits. They did the environmental assessment. They jumped through a whole bunch of hoops. There was people trying to stop them. And then finally, last week, they put the shovels in the ground. They dug. And lo and behold, wouldn't you know it, beneath the earth, cartridges. Many, many cartridges with the inserts of the E.T. video game were there, and they
actually
were unearthed.
Many games inside their boxes, as you say, but those boxes were inside shipping boxes that would have been sent off to a store.
Yeah.
So they literally just took them off apparently what
the... Off the back of a truck and just toss them into a hole.
Well, after all this came out, people apparently found a story that the New York Times did a long time ago about this video game factory somewhere in the area of the dump shutting down, and Atari just taking all these games and just taking them right out of the factory as they shut this factory down and throwing them in the dump, which also explains why they found cartridges of Centipede and Asteroid.
And Military Commander was there as well.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
See, no, those were good games. Centipede and Asteroid were great games.
I was surprised to see Centipede there. But yeah, if it's just like literally one place's, all of their storage goes in there, I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah.
That backs up the story of this whole factory being shut down in the 80s.
So I remember when the story of this came out and we were all like, oh my God, they found it. But were you guys, like, when we found out they were actually going to dig and stuff, are you surprised that they actually found it?
No, because I felt like I knew the story was true. I remember watching some sort of documentary, and in my head, I have this image of this cartoon truck backing up and dropping ET cartridges into a dump. And I don't know where I saw that, but I saw it someplace. And ever since then, I've taken this to be actual fact. So
I was excited that they found it, although I think it's funny. Somebody I saw on Twitter made the joke because the documentary is coming out on Xbox. It was partially funded by Microsoft. And somebody made the joke where it's like, well, I guess we don't need to watch that documentary. Thanks, Xbox, for ruining it. Obviously, we know they were there.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm really...
I do want to watch it.
I would, too.
I do want to watch it for a number of reasons. One, even if we know this entire story about how these cartridges are there and where they came from, this documentary called Atari Game Over Now officially will be also about, you know, the first video game crash in the 80s, not just these Atari cartridges, but how the entire ET game is blamed for bringing down the video game industry in the 80s and stuff like that. So they'll be more than just this dump dig. But at the same time, there's supposed to be a lot more games in the dump hole that they did not actually bring out, and I'm sure they have footage of that, and that I want
to
see.
I'd also like to see what hoops they had to jump through before they got to dig, because I think there was people that were trying to stop them and get in their way. So I'd like to know about that, and B, I'd like to know follow up. Now that they found them, there's still questions that need to be answered.
What are they going to do with them?
What are they going to do with them?
Where are they going to go? Why were they there in the first place? Who was trying to
cover
it up?
Well, we know why they were there.
No, but I mean, there's more to the story than what we know so far. So I'm hoping they'll answer that in the documentary as well.
The one thing I did not see, the one part of this rumor that was never really shown to me, and perhaps you guys saw images that I did not see, was that at some point people were going to the dump and digging up these cartridges. So Atari paid for cement to be put over the entire sort of area the cartridges were put on. I don't remember them digging up any cement blocks or anything like that.
No, I didn't see that. I mean, by the time I got... this all happened on the day I was headed to work, and by the time I got to work, they had made the announcement that they had the first Atari cartridge, or the first ET cartridge had been found. And even from photos from people who were there at the dig site, it just really looked like dirt. Like, I didn't see... Like, they had a backhoe there, and they had a few things, but I didn't see the kind of really big equipment that they would need to break through a giant slab of concrete. It just looked like the regular digging up of a hole.
Yeah, just there's garbage all over the place, and a backhoe, as you say, and cartridges. That's all I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what they dug up, but they found it, which was awesome. And when I was on one of our affiliate stations earlier this week talking to one of the hosts about it, and I made the analogy, and for you kids out there, you won't understand this analogy, but back in the, I think it was the late 70s, early 80s, Geraldo Rivera had this big TV special where they were going to break open Al Capone's vault and see what was inside Al Capone's vault.
Yeah.
And it was like a nationally televised live event, and they cracked it open, and there was nothing in there. And I'm just saying it was the same type of thing, but it was the opposite effect, where they actually found what they were looking for, which was very cool that there was, and it was like a big event apparently. Apparently there was a lot of people there to like watch them dig it up and stuff, and that's kind of cool.
Someone brought DeLorean, I saw.
Yeah, they had you could play some of the games there because they invited people to come down, although apparently a whole bunch of people had left by the time they actually found the cartridges because the windstorm was so bad that it was too much for people to take. So there weren't as many people there when the cartridges were actually found as were there in the start of the morning. But still, to be there would be kind of exciting.
All right, so that's that. We have a lot more coming up in this episode, including reviews of the new Spider-Man and Child of Light as well. And we're going to talk to Brett Laurie from the Blue Jays coming up next on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Have you got Got Game. In the game.
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Omen Qureshi. Brian Calhoun and Christine Chubb around the corner. Around the table. Oh, you're kind of around a corner from me, sort of, a little bit. You can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. Check the blog at sportsnet590.ca. We put our podcasts up there every week as well. You can also find the podcast on the iTunes if you have the iPhone, and the TuneIn app if you have the Android phone. And you can email us, gotgame@sportsnet590.ca. And if you're listening to this on Sunday, it's Star Wars Day, so may the 4th be with you. Brian, I know you're thrilled about that.
What?
That's such a typical Calhoun answer. Someday I will convince you to like that series and love it as much as I do, but okay. That day is not today. Today is the day, though, that we talk about Toronto Blue Jay Brett Laurie, who is from Canada. He plays for the Jays. He's a third baseman. If you listen to the station, you're probably well aware of that because we are the rights holders for the Jays. And he is on the cover of MLB The Show 14, the Canadian cover. Now, the last 2 years, Jose Bautista has been on the cover. This is the third year they're doing a Canadian cover, and lo and behold, there's a Canadian who's on the Canadian cover. So we thought, hey, that's pretty cool. Why don't we find out? So, Brian, you got a chance to talk to Mr. Brett Laurie talk to him about what it's like to be on the cover of MLB The Show 14 Canadian edition.
Before you actually signed up for this, were you playing video games before? Do you have any history with them?
I played a lot of video games. I mean, not a lot of video games, but obviously growing up playing Super Nintendo, playing, N64, playing Ken Griffey Jr. Baseball on 64 on Super Nintendo, and then playing Slugfest, Ken Griffey Jr. Slugfest on 64. So, I got a little bit of history with some video games. I mean, not a whole bunch, but I mean, you see a video game like this, and it's just, you look where video games, where they used to be and where they are now. It's absolutely amazing.
Have they given you any time with MLB 14 since you got in the cover?
I've had a little bit here and there. I mean, not a whole bunch, just because we've been playing so much. I mean, with our real team as well, we've been traveling. We've been traveling and doing our thing, and we've been kind of a tough roadie, and so we've been traveling a lot. But anytime that I get a chance, I always pick it up and try to get a couple innings in if I can.
Well, I'm glad you did that, because I was hoping to ask you, who do you think is a better sort of ball player, you in here you are, or you on the screens behind us?
It's hard to tell, just because, I mean, I haven't played a full season with myself with the PS4 or on the video game, but it's hard for me to just distinguish between the two, because I see myself as a video game, but and then I see myself as real life. So I'd have to say I like myself in real life, just because I'm always ongoing and I'm consecutive, but I enjoy looking at myself on TV and seeing what I'm able to do, and seeing where they put me ranked with everybody else. So it's very cool just watching how I move and just seeing what I can do on the big screen. It's kind of cool.
So given the fact that you had a chance to compare virtual versus TV, do you think they've captured sort of the way you play properly, or perhaps they couldn't prove that?
No, I mean, I definitely think that they've definitely captured that. I mean, especially because now that the PS4 has just come out, and these both go hand in hand with one another, is that the PS4 is like a supercomputer. It just pushes these games, and the graphics are so good. Is what they've been able to do is that they just cover so many different points of what guys do after swings, what they do if they hit a home run, pimping home runs, making good plays. I think diving and making those double plays and doing all these different things. They've just done a lot of little aspects. I think it's not the biggest thing; it's just the little things. I think that go the longest way in the video games, at least for me, because as a player you see all these little things, and then you would see the video games, and sometimes I don't do that, but as a player you see all the little gimmicks that guys do with their batting gloves and with their shoes and when they tap their bat on their cleats. You just see them do all these little things, so when they capture that in the video game, you almost think to yourself, what else could they do?
So this is the third cover. Bautista got the first two. Any hopes or thoughts at this point of perhaps pulling your own back-to-back covers?
I would love to be a part of this again. This is a great opportunity for myself being Canadian. I love being Canadian and get to represent, obviously, Major League Baseball on the cover and for Canada, and get to represent the Blue Jays as well. So that's very cool for myself. Obviously, just coming from Super Nintendo, and now I'm on the cover of PS4, MLB The Show. So, we've come a long way, and it's very cool, and I'm very appreciative of that, and a lot of people to thank. And just thank you for, PS and PlayStation for obviously giving me the opportunity to be here. But this is very cool, and I would love to be back.
You have entire clubhouse full of unbelievable talent. I'm just wondering, do you fear any internal competition from them about perhaps they may take the next cover away from you?
Nah, no, it's not about that with me. This is just a lot of fun. This is just a good opportunity for me to, kind of show myself a little bit, be Canadian, get on the cover, and, promote Canada and promote baseball within Canada. And, what a better way to. I mean, if, I can't tell who's going to be on the next cover. I have no idea who it's going to be. Just got to keep plugging away, keep having fun, and, who knows? Maybe I'll be on it again next year. Who knows?
After you were announced, they said, okay, here's a couple of mock-ups of the cover, and they put to the fans to sort of pick which one would be the game cover. Do you like the cover they chose, or I forget what the other one looks like, but the one that's actually on the game makes it look like you just knocked one out of the park.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's you know, the covers are pretty cool. I mean, I've seen a couple. You know, I've seen ones before on Google, just of ones that people have made themselves, and they actually look pretty cool. But the one that this year, it's very cool, just the way that it looks and getting full extension and just the way it looks, because you see I'm going oppo, so it's obviously good that I stayed inside the ball and went right center with it.
Now, I'm not totally sure if he actually enjoys this or not, but Joe Maurer got probably more, I don't know, praise or attention for a commercial he made when he was on the cover. I mean, the guy can't order steak these days without someone saying, well played, Maurer. You made your own commercial when they put you on the cover. What was that process like?
It was long. It was a long day. It was a lot of fun because I got an opportunity to meet a lot of young kids that were a lot of fun to be around. And it was cool because I'd never done a full commercial. I mean, I've done commercials and stuff before, but that was just different because acting out different scenes and then having to read off a prompter like that and being able to try and blend it all in together and address the kids and do all these things. I mean, it turned out fantastic when I saw all the videos and whatnot of myself and the live feed. It was actually very cool just being able to go back and look at the old school TV and whatnot and just have the kids in front of me and whatnot and represent that. It was just a lot of fun. It was a long day, but the finished product was awesome. It was amazing.
Now, if I remember correctly, it was basketball, kayaking, fencing, I think, as well. I was just wondering, though, were there any other sports you want to sort of include in that camp that did not make it, that perhaps are not as good as baseball?
I don't know. I think they had pretty much them all covered. I think the main sports were covered. They had a bunch there. I think they did a pretty good job of covering all that extreme sports. They had a wingsuit guy there from Red Bull, it looked like. So, they covered everything, I think. I don't think there's anything they used to cover.
That's Brett Laurie of the Toronto Blue Jays third baseman talking about what it's like to be on the cover of MLB The Show 14 Canadian Edition.
And I have to ask, why is it that you guys always send me to interview the baseball people? What am I going to ask a baseball guy about?
I wanted you to ask him about Adam Lind's beard.
Yeah,
damn
the
it.
Beard.
You should have been there then.
We both wanted to go. I was working days that shift, and you know, stuff was happening at City Hall. So that's the way it goes in my life. But it was cool for Brett to take some time for us to talk about what it's like to be on the cover. In related sports news here on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Madden 15. We know it's one of the most popular franchises, especially for our listeners who love to get it and play it every year. The newest one is coming out on August 26th of this year. So keep your eyes peeled for it. It's going to have some new modes in it, and it's going to be on the Xbox 360, Xbox One, PlayStation 3, and PlayStation number 4.
They didn't really get into the details because it looks like from what we can tell of the information that they're giving out at this point, they're waiting for the big unveil at E3 this year. Mm-hmm. But one of the big changes coming up in Madden 15 will be the defensive controls. The way you control your defense will be a lot more immersive in some way. So when we go down to E3 this year, we will put cameras and microphones in people's faces, and we will ask them questions like, what the heck do you mean when you say your defensive controls are going to be more immersive this year?
Exactly. And we should tell you that you will be able to choose who's on the cover as you have been for the last few years, and the winner will be revealed on the day of the NFL draft. So that's pretty soon, actually.
Next week, actually.
Well, it makes sense if the game comes out August 16th that they would have...
Yeah, I guess they have.
They have to kind of make
quick.
Things
I just remember,
moving.
I seem to remember them choosing cover athletes a little closer to release date, but that's pretty soon. That's in 2 weeks. Not even 2 weeks. New Tony Hawk game is coming to the iOS system, but I'm not terribly excited because it is just a lane runner, apparently like Temple Run.
Exactly. Here's the thing.
Like, what?
Remember that NBA game
NBA
Rush, I believe. I showed you a couple of weeks ago. That's also a lane runner where you are basically running up a street or something like that, just running from the bottom of the screen to the top, and then you move left or right using your cell phone screen. You swipe left or right to move your character left and right and avoid obstacles. And honestly, Activision, you have Tony Hawk.
And that's what you do with it?
This is all you do with Tony Hawk? You're the skater moment. Mm. So please, answer me this question. Does this not seem like somehow a waste of the Tony Hawk name?
Well, number one, it's free to play, so I guess they just want to get it out there. And number two, lane runners are relatively popular these days, but there are so many. Like, I mean, there's one for every kid's movie. Like, there's a Despicable Me lane runner, there's a Brave lane runner, there's so many different other lane runners.
I mean, there's the NBA Rush one we talked about earlier.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's kind of weak. I'm not really that interested in it. They could do a lot more with the franchise, but maybe they're just trying to let it breathe for a while. I don't know. I don't know what they're up to. I hope they pull out another good Tony Hawk game, because I used to love those games.
But I'm reading the news story here, and it's pretty much exactly what you expect. You swipe left or right to avoid obstacles. You collect glowing orbs like every other.
Have you played Temple Run? That's pretty much what this is.
Yes.
that's what this sounds like. That's what, I mean, I guess I'll try it when it comes out, but I really, honestly, if I'm going to be honest, don't care about it.
No release date yet, but expected out later this year. That's all we know at this point.
You can kickflip your way into it at some point later on this year.
Probably not even that.
You know what's coming up next, though? Some reviews, including Child of Light, and I'm going to talk about the new Spider-Man game. That's all coming up on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The fan club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. We've got game. Do you? Gameplay.
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Momin Qureshi here, Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb over there across the table from me. On Twitter at GotGame590, Sportsnet590.ca is our website. You can find our blog and the podcast up there. You can also find the podcast on the iTunes and the TuneIn apps for iPhones and Androids, respectively. We have reached the review portion of our show. Christine and Brian are going to talk about Child of Light from Ubisoft a little later on. But first, this weekend, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 movie comes out. And so I am going to review The Amazing Spider-Man 2 video game.
Let me ask you, is it amazing?
No. But it's not bad, though. That's what I can say that right off the bat.
Have no idea what you mean by it. They seem like two contradictory terms.
Yeah. Well, no, that's because something's not amazing doesn't mean it's not good. It's just amazing is quite a grandiose term to put on something, and it should be pretty spectacular if you have that. So here's the thing. Amazing Spider-Man 2. I reviewed Amazing Spider-Man 1, the game, when it came out a few years ago, and it was pretty good. I really liked that game. It was enjoyable. The mechanics of it were good. It had
you
a lot
spent
of good...
way too much time in that game running around a building.
Yeah.
For a guy who can swing from like building to building across all of New York City, you spent way too much time running inside one single building. It bugged me a lot. Do you do that in this game?
Kind of. I mean, it's relatively similar to The Amazing Spider-Man 1 in terms of this game is also made by Beenox, Canadian studio. They made number one, and you go and you start this game, and in the beginning of the game, you're looking for the person who shot and killed Uncle Ben, and that's where the game starts.
Uncle Ben is dead?
Yeah, I know. All that rice gone to waste.
Dang it.
And
I don't even know what that means.
Uncle Ben's rice. What do you mean?
Oh, okay. Now you get it.
Come on, Brian. So it looks a lot like the first one. The mechanics, okay, it's got the web rush, which if you've played it before, that helps you rather than just swinging one to one, you can set it up so you can just like line up swing points and then press one button and boom, boom, boom. Spidey can swing from 3 to 4 locations at once instead of you having to go one by one.
Because the annoying part of playing as Spider-Man is swinging around.
No, it's not annoying. I love it. But I like the web rush technique too, though.
I was being sarcastic.
This game... there's so much to talk about, but before I start, I want to say the inclusion of Stan Lee in this game is awesome. I mean, he's been in previous games, but particularly in this game, the Stan Lee portion of it is great. He's in it quite a bit. The way they have him in it is really cool. He used his Stan Lee euphemisms, and it's cool. It's cool the way they include him in the game, so that part made me pretty happy.
As a guy who's actually talked to the man in person.
Yes, I have. Highlight of my life.
I guess that is kind of impressive that you're... so impressed by this virtual guy when you've actually talked to the real dude.
The other thing I can say is I haven't seen Amazing Spider-Man 2, the movie, yet, but what I remember from Amazing Spider-Man 1... So I don't even know if the plot of this game takes place after the movie or before the movie. They said a couple of things in the game which made me think that it takes place afterwards, but I remember Amazing Spider-Man 1, the video game, took place right after Amazing Spider-Man, the movie, and it did give away spoilers, so be forewarned about that this time as well. Although I think anybody who is really a diehard fan will watch the movie this weekend, probably in the next few days. In the game, you play as Spidey, and you're trying to track down this serial killer who's going out and killing all these bad guys as part of the game, and a lot of the mechanics are the same as Amazing Spider-Man 1. You got to swing through. You have the web rush. You can collect those little comic books, which is great, which was a really fun part of last time. In this game, you can collect little action figures, which, as you know, you collect and then you have them as you go through.
So collectibles.
Yeah, collectibles. One of the great things is you go to this comic book store, and in the comic book store is where you'll have all your stuff. So you'll have all the comic books. You'll have all the collectibles. And then there's this arcade machine that Peter Parker can walk up to and play, and he can play as Spider-Man. And it's sort of like a side game inside. It's a game within a game, like we talked about with Watch Dogs last week.
Very Catherine of them.
Yes, exactly. And so in it, you play as Spidey, and you take on waves of opponents one by one by one, and then you fight them off. And that's it's not very complicated, but that's what it is. I really enjoyed this game. It's not spectacular or amazing, as Brian said, but it's a good game. It's a good, fun game to play as Peter Parker, play as Spider-Man. It's actually pretty serious. The Batman games have a tendency to be very dark. This one, Spidey games don't generally, but this one is a lot about like death and murder and a serial killer and trying to capture him. And they have the relationship between Peter and Aunt May, and Peter's kind of down and Aunt May is trying to pump him up and all this kind of stuff.
Well, after the success of those Batman films that were also very dark and brooding, it's not hard to believe that Sony, the movie company, because that's who makes these Spider-Man films, probably made the movie a little dark and brooding as well, because apparently that's what sells today. So it's not a hard leap to go from broody Batman movie, broody Spider-Man movie, broody sort of Spider-Man game.
Exactly. And another thing they, I think, I don't remember if this was in the first Spider-Man game, but one of the things that they seem to have taken from the Batman games is there's a lot more to this game. There's like side missions where if you hear somebody calling for help, you can go do that and you'll gain XP. And then there's photo missions where you have to go and take pictures of certain things, and that's part of it as well.
So is this open world?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty open world. I mean, you got to go to all these different places, and that's, you know, that's why they have the web rush feature, because sometimes the place that Peter needs to get to is all the way on the other side of New York. So you've got to go, and so rather than just swinging, you can sort of web rush to take yourself through certain places relatively quickly. There's a lot of repetitiveness in this game. The fighting mechanics, it's button mashing. You're just, you know, trying to fight off guys using just slamming all the buttons and stuff like that. And you gain XP, and you can gain, as you get XP, you can upgrade your web slinging and your fighting mechanics and all that. And then there's different suits that you can get as you go along and stuff like that. It's not complicated. It's pretty straightforward. It's not outstanding, but it's still pretty good. If you like Spider-Man, if you're a Spider-Man fan, if you like playing superhero games, I would say get this game. I enjoyed it myself. There's actually some other stuff that you can do with it too. Like when you load it up, it comes with like the trailer for the movie, and Andrew Garfield and Jamie Foxx are answering questions. And there's like a web shooter game that you can play, which I didn't try, but I think it's a Kinect game where you can play as do a web shooter thing, and then it's got the game within a game. So there is a lot of stuff you can do with it. Overall, I'd say this game is anywhere between a 7.5 and an 8 out of 10 for Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Wow.
Yeah,
I believe you're giving it the highest score I've seen so far.
I've seen some scores around the same, similar.
Okay, well, I'm just...
Why, what have you heard?
6 out of 10 from Destructoid, 6 out of 10 from Polygon, 5.5 from Game Informer, 5.4 from IGN, and that's just me converting all their scores into... out of 10, so I believe some of those actually do it out of 100.
Interesting.
But.
Well, I think it's like a 7.5 for me, honestly. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. It wasn't fantastic, but it was still pretty good.
Do you fight a giant insect-like robot? Because that's really all I remember from the first game. Well, that and running around New York City trying to collect comic books.
Yeah.
On-
yeah. Honestly, the comic book part, it's a great part of the game where you go around and you collect these comic books, but when anytime you get near to a comic book, you hear this kind of shimmering noise, and then you have to go find out where the comic book is. It's like you're on
top
of a building somewhere.
Like it's from the first game.
Yeah, and it's exactly the same as the first game, but it's so distracting. Like you're on the way, and it's like, oh my god, Aunt May's in trouble. I have to go save Aunt May. And so you're swinging through the city, and then you hear shimmering, and you're like, oh, comic book. And then you start going look for the comic book, and then even Spidey says, you should probably go see Aunt May. You're like, no, comic book, gotta go see comic book. So it's distracting, and it's definitely like for somebody who has like ADD, it's like, I want to go with that instead. You are listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Now time for Christine to take over the helm and talk about Child of Light.
Yes, Child of Light. It's out of Ubisoft Montreal. It's a JRPG, and you play as...
I was just about to say, it's part of their program to, between big games, have members of their development team, instead of firing people, hey, why don't you just make this smaller game, then you can work on that, and we will make some profit off of it because we don't have to put as much money into it because it's a smaller title.
That's true.
And you still have a job.
Well, this is exactly what this is.
Yeah, I believe this is the first of that sort of project.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, when you think of Ubisoft, oftentimes you do think of those like 20, 30 hour Assassin's Creed types games where
Far Cry.
Yeah, and this is
Watch Dogs.
This is totally different from that. It's a little
The Crew.
The Crew. Let's name every Ubisoft game that we can think of.
That's what I'm going for.
No, so okay, Child Splinter of Light. Cell. Child of Light is a lovely little game, actually. It's, first of all, visually, it's quite beautiful.
It looks, I'm struggling to think of a game that I think looks as pretty as Child of Light.
No, it looks like you're walking through a water painting. Like, even the textures in the background, I mean, it doesn't have a lot of depth to it because it's a pretty simplistic game. But the look-wise is beautiful. When you go into these towns, the colors are really rich, and but yet it's so delicate looking at the same time.
You said depth, but I would also say that the backgrounds, mm-hmm. there's always, well, not always, but there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in the background. Sometimes you just see like a giant walking in the far distance.
And your controller shakes. I loved that when the controller shakes and the giant goes by, because the controller started to shake before I saw the giant. I was like, what's going on?
But every once in a while, there is some pretty cool stuff in the background there.
Yeah, it's definitely a game where it's just so pretty to look at. So the whole concept of the game is that you play as this little girl. It's kind of like a fairy tale comes to life. You play as a little girl who was the child of a royalty, and her father gets remarried, and she slips into a coma. They don't really talk about how, in the beginning, how this happens. And she awakes in this new and excitingly different world, and she is being referred to as the Child of Light. And so her whole goal in this is to get through to this world, to go back to be reunited with her father, the Duke. Throughout the game, you find out a little bit about what's going on the other side in the real world and her struggles. She meets a whole cast of crazy little characters, and everybody has kind of a little story to tell about what they're doing in this world.
And truly a cast of characters.
Yeah, some of them are just bananas.
Yeah, there are tons of video games that are populated with just forgettable throwaway support cast, but I mm-hmm. feel like the characters inside Child of Light are all well thought out and all very interesting in their own way.
Yeah, one of my favorite ongoing jokes throughout this game is that the juggler doesn't rhyme. And the entire story is told through, as most children's books are, told in rhyme, except that the juggler doesn't rhyme. So every time the juggler comes to say something, they always have to say, don't you mean this? And they'll end that sentence with a rhyme. And I just thought it was funny. I thought it was very clever, and it goes on through the game. And I really liked it. That's generally the feeling of the game, is that you're going through this storybook to bring this little girl home.
Don't forget the fairy. You have this little blob of light that follows you around.
It's a firefly.
Oh, it's a firefly. Sorry. And that's one of the mechanics in the game. And you can use this firefly to distract your enemies mm-hmm. or heal yourself, and while you're controlling the girl with one stick, you control the firefly with the other stick.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of what was that game, the Ellen Page game? Beyond Two Souls, where you could control Aiden and then her with different movements. And also, if you're playing this in two players, the other player can play as Firefly and you can play as the little girl.
I don't know why you would do that, though.
I don't know why you are.
That seems so boring.
That's what I thought, too. I was funny. I was going to have my friend come over and play it. And I thought, he's probably going to get really bored after like 5 minutes. But Firefly is the only person of your group who you get to see and control in the outside world. Everybody else you really get to control only in the fighting realms. And there are fighting realms. This is an RPG. It's a turn-based RPG. This is a natural for this kind of game, where you go through and you have to fight things. There's bosses, and some of them I found were really difficult. Like, turn-based fighting is not my favorite style of fighting in a game.
Me
I mean,
either.
Not that I'm the biggest button-mashing fan, and those only seem to be the two options recently, but the problem I find with when it comes to turn-based gaming is that the characters that join your team always seem to have higher ranking levels and better skills than you. So I find I very rarely used the little girl in my fighting. I was almost always using everybody else. And it's fine, except that you don't get to level her up as much. And because everybody else started so higher, I kind of forgot that I was supposed to use her at times.
I found that I used her, and I did not play as much of this as you did, mm-hmm. so I really can't give a review score. But there's this weird sort of bar at the bottom of the screen. And what happens is the bar has three stages. Either you are waiting to take your turn,
mm-hmm.
you have begun your turn,
yes.
or you have actually completed your turn. And the difference between begun and complete is that when you've begun your turn, you're sort of winding up to,
yes.
let's say, swing a sword. And when you've done your turn, you've swung your sword.
Yes.
And the cool thing I found is that you can interrupt many of your opponents mid-swing. And that's when I would use the girl. I would use her to sort of, well, here's the more powerful friend, the juggler, the mouse, so on and so forth. They are hitting harder than I am. Why don't I use them to do damage? And this little girl, well, she'll interrupt the swings of the opponents. And then once you do that, those opponents, they have to go back to the beginning of this bar thing and go back to sort of, I'm waiting for my turn mode.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of actually attacking, which is kind of interesting. I've never seen the game do that.
You know, that's interesting, because that wasn't the way that I would fight. What I would do is I would use Firefly to distract the opponent so that the two characters or however many I was playing as would be able to level up quicker. So as if Firefly was distracting them, I'd be able to get a few shots in, and I'd have one of them go in attack mode and the other one go in defense mode, so that, and then I'd switch it up so that they could each have an even turn, so that one wasn't really getting absolutely pummeled all the time and that both of them weren't exposed all the time. Really, if you're going to talk about this game, you have to talk about the sound of it as well. The music in this game really works to bring you into this environment, and the second I started playing this game, I felt like I was in this little town. I loved that you could fly around with her. Once you got the little wings relatively early on in the game, no longer were you just walking the linear path. You could fly up, you would explore, and I loved that exploration. And I think if you're going to play this game, you really have to delve into some of these weird hidden caves. You have to go down these little strange little paths. You have to fly to literally the top of the screen to see if you're missing anything. Like, and that's the great depth that I wasn't expecting from this
game.
I
don't remember if you guys can tell me the title of this game. Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, I believe, is a game.
Yeah.
And it's a game where you kind of are a ship and you're exploring all these tunnels underneath this planet, this twisted shadow planet, and it's odd course changes and odd tunnels and stuff like that just spread out across the planet like a maze. That's sort of the navigation of this game. It's all very pretty. It's nothing like a twisted shadow planet, but you're just taking all these strange turns and floating around this entire world. You never really walk anywhere. You just fly around this maze of twisting, turning things that in reality are trees and like a forest and stuff like that, or a castle, but you never really walk. You just fly around everywhere.
I really also wasn't expecting a small craft-based system in it. Overall, this game was really good. I liked it a lot. I wasn't expecting much, and it's such a quaint little game. Like, it's so exciting and interesting. I'm going to give it an 8.5.
I know we have to go really quickly, but I will simply say that as much as I love this game, I'm not totally sure I can suggest it to a lot of people because I feel like it's too artsy. I mean, if you listen to God Game and all you play is sports games, don't get this. If all you play is Call of Duty or Battlefield, don't get this. If the games you play are, say, Journey, Flower, Limbo, those really artsy games, that's what this is. And I love that exists, and I have been enjoying my time with it. And I will finish it even though I haven't finished it at this point. I don't know who I can really recommend it to, though. It's a hard game to recommend.
It's a fun game, though.
It's a fun game, but it's not like Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, or any other big budget game where it's made for the biggest crowd possible.
Right. It's an 8.5 out of 10 for Child of Light from Christine Chubb. That's all the time we have for this week. So for Brian Calhoun and Christine Chubb, I'm Omen Qureshi. This has been Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.